If worse comes to worse, let me know, Bruce. I'll send you a care package.
I appreciate it. It should hopefully be good. I've got like 3 months worth of food stored up. So.
Well, there's the first cut. Don't want people coming to your door.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're more than welcome to come to my door. I've got plenty of ammunition for anybody who wants to come over.
All right, that's cut number two.
Well, yeah. Those are the people that kind of bug me. It's like, you can't buy that much ammunition, then why are you buying 500 rolls of toilet paper?
Really? That's their ammunition. That's their ammunition.
It's like, good God.
I saw an article today out of Bloomberg that people are actually trading toilet paper for eggs. Like, yes. They're already bartering for that.
Well, it would not surprise right now me. We have a slight shortage of eggs on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. They can't keep up with the demand, and prices just went up this past week, I believe, on mm-hmm. eggs and a few other items because they're tough to get.
Uh-huh. Shall we get started, gentlemen? I've said that for probably the third or fourth time now. Yeah, okay.
I thought we'd started already.
No, not yet.
The few cuts, but yeah.
No, not yet. I'm stalling, I guess, because I'm so tired. I really am. I'm so tired of this stuff already, and I know we got a long way to go, and I'm done with it, right? I'm done with it. I was sitting on the couch today, and I'm just like, you know what? I am sick of this. And I'm sure a lot of people that are listening right now, they're sick of it too already. And we haven't even really started yet. So, and what do I mean by that? I mean, this isn't going to last 2 weeks. We're not going to have this wrapped up by Easter and back to business. It's not going to happen. New article this morning.
Another 16 months.
No, goodness, no. So something this morning came out that stood out to me. A new study out of MIT says that, well, we talked a little bit about this the other day, but I mean, it was one study from MIT. This is another one that's come out now from a different professor, associate professor from MIT. And he says that 27 feet is now the new social distancing. Like, that's what it should be. And it could stay in the air for hours. So if it could stay suspended in the air, you know, the virus itself encased in a residue or droplet nuclei is how he put it. It says that it can stay suspended in the air for hours. He says, rather than the assumed safety of 6 feet, he warns that the pathogen bearing droplets of all sizes can travel 23 to 27 feet. Let me see. He warned this in a newly published research paper that the current guidelines are based on outdated models from the 1930s, which, I mean, that's kind of, yeah, we were dealing with the very early fallout of the Spanish flu around that time. It was about 15, 20 years after the Spanish flu. So, we're working on those old guidelines, taking in account that what have we heard from the start of this thing? Oh, it's like the flu. No, it's not. I'll challenge that to anybody. Explain to me, if this is like the flu, then explain to me why you had people, at least in the initial stages. I mean, I guess it can be kind of hard to argue this point. Look at cruise ships, for example. You've got a petri dish there, pretty much, a laboratory, more or less. And you had people that were becoming contaminated on cruise ships when they were opposite ends of the ship almost. How were they getting contaminated? How did the virus infect one person at one end of the ship from another person at the opposite end of the ship? The same way that's happening right now on a U.S. aircraft carrier, I might add, down in Guam. How's that happening? The air circulation.
Isn't that the Roosevelt?
Yes, it is. The Teddy Roosevelt, yeah. Or the Theodore Roosevelt, I'm sorry. How's that happening? The air circulation system. Same thing with people that are flying on airlines. This is what's happening. GP and I had this conversation a long time ago. When I first brought this up, when we were first seeing cases out of China, we were still taking flights. This is before Trump shut the flights down from mainland China. And I said, if one person sneezes on a flight of 250 people, and that one person has the flu, I said, how many people on that flight can possibly get it? And he said, all of them. So
exactly. I mean,
it's this idea.
It's a closed system.
Exactly. It's the closed air circulation system. Absolutely. What are you supposed to do with that? You know, the same thing with hospitals. You go into a hospital with all this stuff. I mean, it's going to be traveling through the air circulation system. This is precisely what people are not being told. They're not being told what was in this research paper about how this guy put this out. I mean, we kind of figured from the start, from the very start, we looked at, as soon as we started looking at the maps and the rate of spread, I mean, we had people look at it. They were like, no, that's airborne. That is not touchy-feely stuff. Now, it's not airborne as in the form of being aerosolized. There's a difference there. Being aerosolized means it can survive in the air independently without any type of a, let's say, an external medium. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So you do need a vector in this case. And in this case, it would be the human. The human becomes the vector. And then when you cough or you sneeze, that virus then encapsulates, as he put it, in a residue or droplet nuclei. And it can stay suspended in the air or on a surface in that particle for hours. And on surfaces, and we've seen research papers in up to 9 days. I mean, I don't necessarily think that that's how it is in all cases, but nonetheless, I mean, it does survive on surfaces for a period of time. Bruce, you said something in the early days about UV rays. How long does it take UV rays to kill one of these coronaviruses?
Well, really, most viruses and bacteria in general, it takes about 2 seconds. UV light. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But anyway, he says that there is an underappreciated potential exposure range, which is absolutely true. I don't see any. If what he says in this research paper that he found is accurate, then I think it bears some relevance to this. And he says that a 2020 report from China that showed a virus particles could be found in the ventilation systems in hospital rooms of patients with COVID-19. Go figure. Okay. But goes on to say here, basically in the conclusion, a media outlet says there's an urgency in revising the guidelines currently being given by the World Health Organization and the CDC on the needs of protective equipment, particularly for the frontline healthcare workers. What do you think about bigger social distancing? Do we need to have it? Do you think 6 feet's enough? Do you think 2 meters is enough? Do we need to go further than that?
I would be happy if they would obey the 6 feet rule, at least for my work. I've got people literally standing next to me, reaching over me, climbing over me to get things off the shelf. And it's like, folks, if you need something, tell the worker, excuse me, would you mind stepping back so I can reach for that? Thank you. Or they'll put it somewhere where you can reach it. Let them know before getting in their face, because we got to maintain that distance. We just had a warehouse worker go out for self-isolation because he had been exposed. He hasn't tested positive. But, you know, too many people drop. There goes your food supply. There goes your truckers. You know, it's like they talk about hospital workers. It's all interconnected. Now, in terms of 27 feet, I don't see how that is even possible in an enclosed space. We have the National Guard coming to our workplace tomorrow to man the doorways to maintain the new mandated occupancy limits for grocery stores. 27 feet? I'd be happy to have them 7 feet away from me.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No. You're fine. I just realized I forgot to say, welcome back, Tavish. Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Why, thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
I guess I kind of missed that part. Sorry.
I'd be okay with just, here's the thing. I'm kind of torn on the whole 27 feet thing because realistically, any kind of sickness like flu, common cold, any of that kind of stuff can be spread from sneezing, coughing. I mean, the water droplet thing is pretty much, if you're sick, pretty much that's how it spreads. I mean, more or less. 27 feet isn't really feasible in our current society. It would take some huge changes unless you're going to start requiring every person to be in this self-contained, you know, suit of some kind or something. Then, you know, at minimum 6 feet, if you're in public, you know, we kind of had these rules about, you know, covering your mouth when you sneeze and cough. You know, you learn that as a kid. Well, there's a reason for that. And this is the reason is these droplets can stay in the air for hours at a time or infect a surface unintentionally for days.
Okay, let's jump over to something else. Bruce, you were complaining the other day about, and rightfully so, by the way, you were complaining the other day about gun stores being threatened to close by the LA County Sheriff. He said that if those businesses were going to remain open despite the order to close because he didn't consider them to be an essential business, then he would shut off their water and power. Well, I think you're in luck. The feds have dubbed gun shops essential. So the LA County Sheriff says he will not order them to close during the pandemic, which, by the way, we've said from the start that they're essential. You've got you've got weed stores and you've got liquor stores that are staying open. Those are, quote, essentials. But gun stores aren't. That's completely counterproductive. I'm sorry. Because if you look at what they're doing, they're prioritizing crime at this point in certain U.S. cities. In other words, they're taking police officers away from responding to certain calls, and they're focusing on being a frontline responder to medical cases. Okay, well, that kind of leaves the average citizen in a place where they can't protect themselves. That's the point, right? The police are supposed to be there to ensure the public safety. Well, if the police are tied up elsewhere dealing with another issue, in this case, you know, a larger issue here, it's up to the citizen to ensure their own responsibility and their own protection for their families. So that's why we've said from the start, gun shops are essential. But at the same time, those that are going into gun shops to buy guns for the first time, my opinion, they don't have any business buying guns because they don't know how to use them. If they knew how to use them, they were properly trained and responsible enough to be around and to how to handle that firearm, then that's a completely different story. But a lot of these people have never even seen a gun in person before, and they're walking into these stores for the first time. Let's go to let's start with you, Bruce. What do you think about this new order to have all the gun shops across the country considered essential and not closed?
I think it was pretty important. Second Amendment. I mean, your points aside, just looking at the Second Amendment, I mean, if you plan to keep that, you plan to have a nation, you know, able to protect itself against, as you were saying, possible criminals, the Second Amendment is also there to protect you against an overreaching government, you know, a tyrannical government. Yeah, it's absolutely necessary to have these open.
I know in Rhode Island, Governor Raimondo has authorized shooting ranges to stay open only because of the people buying weapons, safety instruction, how to properly use it, so on and so forth. She set occupancy limits, indoor ranges, no more than 2 people at a time, outdoor ranges, no more than 4 people at a time. So some states did take into account the fact that, well, if people are buying weapons, we need to be properly trained, how to use them. So I agree that they should be open, if nothing else, for the general safety of not only the person buying the weapon, but the people around him.
That's actually a really good point, by the way. Back in the day, there used to be a mentality of, let's say you were robbed, and if you didn't do everything in your power to stop that person and they go and rob someone else, then that second robbery is also on your hands as well, because you failed to stop that person. So that was kind of a mentality back in the day. We don't really have that anymore, but that's actually a fair point, especially in the middle of a pandemic when you can't really rely on police to, you know, as Johnny said, they're busy doing other things, you know, and so they're not necessarily able to respond to all emergencies. I'm not saying you should go out and be a vigilante and, you know.
Oh, come on. We were just getting to the fun part. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I've talked to people that the last few days, they're just being crazy over there in the U.S. They're just being crazy. They're purposely driving over the speed limit past police officers on purpose, knowing that they're not going to get pulled over. I mean, come on. You know, have a little bit of a brain. You know, think of what if you just happen to what if there's an incident where there is someone out there who is on their own walking their dog and there's an accident and you run off the road or you lose control of your vehicle and you cause cause bodily harm to that person. That's on you, you know. Let's be mindful of that.
Not only is it on you, but it's also the fact of emergency. The first responders are busy. They're swamped with other things. And so they're not necessarily going to be able to quickly respond to your stupidity. I mean, these, for example, in this scenario, the speed limit laws are there not just because, well, you know, they're setting rules and wanting you to abide by the rules. And if you don't, they're going to give you a ticket so they get money off you. That's not the only motive there. The motive is also these roads are designed and rated for certain speeds. You cannot take corners at certain speeds. So they set up guidelines to ensure your safety as well as, you know, safety of others. And by you violating those things, it's not just you breaking the law. It's also unwise. You're going to end up hurting someone or hurting yourself. And in the middle of a pandemic, you really shouldn't be doing that. First responders' supplies should be used elsewhere, not on your stupidity.
Well, also the fact that there's a limited number of ambulances, emergency vehicles, and if you have to take one out of service to sterilize it, now you have less options available. There's only so many ambulances to go around in normal times. These are not normal times. So, folks, you know, let's think about this. Not only is it for your safety, but for the general public. As they talk about the herd immunity with vaccinations, herd safety. Think about this. It's not just you, it's everybody around you, like you were saying, gentlemen. You got to watch out for that.
Let's jump up to some of these predictions. I mean, right now in the United States, we're working off of predicted numbers. So we're basing our response off of projections and possible projections. Now, we started with we wanted to be back open. What was it? By Easter? You know, Trump wanted everyone back, economy back running, booming by Easter. Well, that's not going to happen because some of the newest figures have shown that we're going to be trending in a different way, let's just say. One of these predictions run by scenarios, and this comes out by a model analysis of the University of Washington School of Medicine, and it shows that, this is their call, okay? 2,271 Americans will die from coronavirus on April 15th, and the pandemic will stretch past June. That's their call. And it says the analysis predicts the number of deaths will then start decreasing slowly after April 15th. So they're saying that the peak is going to be in 2 weeks. With the rate of spread and the rate of infection right now that we're seeing just in New York alone, I don't think that that's going to hit that target. I think we're going to be well past that. And with what we heard and what we read just about 15, 20 minutes ago that's coming out of San Francisco, or excuse me, out of the state of California. The state of California announced just a few minutes ago that they will no longer be testing. Well, excuse me. I need to put this right. They will no longer make the numbers public of those healthcare workers, the frontline workers. They will no longer make their infected numbers available to the public. So they will be repressing that data from here on out. So you can take that for what you want. Now, like I said, when you see a pandemic arise and when it comes out into the world, as I was saying yesterday, you have to pay very close attention to the health system of each respective country. But in this case, we're looking at each respective state. We're talking about the U.S. as it relates to this. And if they're repressing the numbers on the number of healthcare workers that are infected or become infected or even become a fatality of it itself, God forbid, if they're repressing those numbers, then that doesn't give us, the public, a very good way to gauge the status of the health system. So I think that's a very bad move to make. That's just me personally. I don't particularly care for that. I think that's a bad idea. But it says here, according to this prediction, getting back to this, it says deaths will drop below 100 after June 9th, according to this analysis. Some people could continue to die of the virus as late as July, although deaths should be below the epidemic levels of 10 per day by the first week of July. Dr. Fauci, we've heard a prediction out of him the last couple of days. He said, actually yesterday, as a matter of fact, or excuse me, day before yesterday, he said that we're looking anywhere between 100 and 200,000 deaths. As of Monday, the U.S. had more than 150,000 confirmed, but Bruce, we determined that's because we said a few weeks ago that since they were going to start mass testing, you're going to see those numbers increase. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be bad, but it's going to look bad, right?
Yeah.
We're on that track now. It looks bad, but at the moment, it's not as bad as it looks. I know that's a little bit of a tongue twister, if you will, but that's really what it is. But as of Monday, all right, we've got 150,000 confirmed in the U.S. and more than 2,700 deaths. And right now, I believe Alex just sent this in. He said, or sent this across to the desk here. He says that in New York alone, in New York City alone, right, which the hospital ship Comfort arrived there yesterday, and we're looking at 38,087 cases and 914 confirmed deaths at this moment. And I'm sorry, those were yesterday's numbers. Today's numbers are showing 60. Really? Those numbers doubled? No way. Okay. Oh, New York. Okay, these are New York State numbers. All right, I'm sorry. I thought this was New York City numbers. New York State numbers right now, they're looking at 66,000 confirmed cases, 1,218 fatalities thus far. And we can jump into, do you guys have anything you want to say on that? If not, we can jump into New York itself. Is there anything you guys want to talk about as it relates to what I just said about the projected numbers, the possible projected numbers?
Well, if I may, Johnny, I think a good analogy, anyone that's been in the military or the medical field, they all know head wounds look horrendous. There's blood everywhere, but the blood vessels are so close to the skin. It bleeds a lot, but it's not as you clean it up and go, oh, okay, that's not so bad after all. So I think when people see these numbers, they're like, oh my God. But like you said, not everybody's going to be critically sick. Not everybody's going to die. Some people won't even know they have it. You know, end of 2 weeks, well, I still feel fine, and they go out. So it's a matter of perception. And I think that might be why they're trying to hold off putting out the number of healthcare workers, because some people are going to start to panic. We have doctors now that go home. One doctor's living in a tent in his backyard so he doesn't infect his family. Others are going home, changing and cleaning themselves in the garage before they go in. So it's one of those things that a lot of people are getting so overwhelmed by this information. Yeah, it looks horrendous until you dig into it and I go, oh, okay, well, you know, it's just a small cut in the head. That's where all the blood came from. Well, look at these numbers. Yeah, but not everybody's going to get sick. Not everybody's going to die. So it's one of those things you have to keep it in perspective, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. And like you were saying, Johnny, we were expecting a rise in numbers as more test kits come out. You know, we have test kits that are beginning production that take what, like 5 minutes to process.
Yeah.
I mean, we have other ones that are 45 minute ones. So we're going to see these numbers are going to spike and they're going to increase just because, you know, it's more available, the testing. So yeah, don't be shocked and surprised when you start seeing numbers raised like this. It doesn't necessarily mean it's spreading, you know, really fast. And it's just the fact that we know it's spreading now.
And one of the other things to your earlier point, Tavish, is, as you were saying, is about the number of people that could fall to this thing. The one very critical thing that we're not getting in all this are the people that, like, they're not releasing demographics as far as age range. They're not telling us, you know, what the age range is. They're not telling us if they have underlying or pre-existing conditions. They're not telling us if they're immunocompromised. None of this. They're not telling us if they were a smoker or if they were a heavy alcohol drinker, a drug user. None of it. So I kind of look at it and say, okay, well, I'm not saying that, you know, people shouldn't be concerned and not take it seriously. They absolutely should. But in this case, if you are any of what I mentioned, if you're, you know, one of those people, if you're in a certain demographic, if you're in a certain age range, if you have an underlying health condition or something, that's valuable data. So if somebody falls, if somebody contracts this and then they end up falling victim to it, but they had, say, I don't know, say they had, let's say they were asthmatic. Well, they will log that as a COVID-19 death, but they won't mention that they were asthmatic. If somebody has, let's say they're a terminal cancer patient, they're already immunocompromised due to chemo treatment. Well, if someone contracts COVID-19, then that hastens that process along of attacking the body, and there's no chance of that person surviving. So they'll chalk that up as a COVID-19 case, but they won't say anything else outside of that. That person then becomes a statistic in this pandemic, but they don't. I mean, what does that tell? What does that tell someone like myself, for example, who is a very healthy person that takes care of himself? I mean, I understand. I'm able to see through this to a great extent, but a lot of people out there are not. They don't really think much beyond what they see on the television. And I'm not talking about our listeners. I mean, if they're listening to us, that means they're not watching TV mostly. So what does that say to someone out there, the average person or even the new listener? What does that say to them when they're seeing this and they're seeing that example, you know, New York, they're saying 98 people died in 7 hours. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that they all died of just contracting COVID. That disease with nothing else. Right. It doesn't say that. It just says 98 people died in 7 hours. That's all it says. So how does one make a distinction, and how does one try and look through that in your opinion?
At least for me, I guess I'll jump in first. It's a matter of perspective. Okay, 98 deaths in 7 hours. How many car related? How many construction accidents? People that fell on the stairs? And then obviously COVID related, you had pneumonia, respiratory system distress, whatever it might be, AIDS patients. We don't know. It's 98 deaths, but it's not taken in perspective because they don't tell you, like you were saying, X amount here, X amount of this, car accidents. So for some people, yeah, they get a little scared. It's like, oh, but you got to step back and think, wait a minute, not everybody died of COVID. You know, somebody's grandmother, unfortunately, had a heart attack, guy overstressed, had a stroke, bakery accident, you know, electrocution. So who knows how many different categories those deaths make up. So for me, it's at least, yeah, you see the numbers, but you always have to take that little grain of salt with it because, wow, yeah, but it's not all one thing. And I think that's what people forget. They just see the number and it's like, oh my God, 100,000, 200,000 deaths. A lot of people, they can't think of what that entails. Like, how much room does $1 million take up? If you packed it up in boxes, how much would it take up? 3x3, 5x5, 10x10 space. People just don't have the comprehension. Once you get to a certain point, it becomes a number. Oh, okay, 1 million, whatever. So I think it's a matter of perception. And also, you know, stop and think it through. Folks, it's not everybody dying from all of this COVID stuff. You know, it could be, like you kind of said, smoker or whatever it is. So I think it's a matter of remembering that it's not all one thing. It's spread out over different categories.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing that people can do to the listener, if you're concerned about, you know, you're seeing these numbers, oh, so many people died, you know, within this time frame, look at the demographics in that area for a normal day and see how many deaths they have in a normal day. Or for that matter, just look at the annual deaths, because a lot of these websites, what they're doing is they take what the annual deaths are or the rate that it has been so far and stretching it out over an annual span and then figuring out what it is per hour that have died. When you do the same for, you know, a normal year without a pandemic, you're finding that, oh, wow, it really is like 10 people an hour that die normally. I mean, just of heart disease, I believe it was something like 10 a day. It was like 10 a day or 10 an hour 10 a day. Or something.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's something really high, and that's just in New York, like state. So when you look at the figures, there's a lot of people dying every day already. And then when you add in they had COVID, well, again, like we were saying, they could have had heart disease to begin with, and they contracted COVID-19, and that expedited their death. And then, you know, it'll say they died of COVID-19, when in reality, it's possible they could have died this year anyway, just from the heart disease. So, you know, keep that in perspective.
And, you know, I think one of the other important things here also is, and I know that I bash on a lot of these people that are up there. I call them so-called experts and all that stuff. There are some people up there that are political, yes, but there are also people up there that know exactly what they're talking about. Maybe I should kind of reiterate that, you know, not everybody up there is a complete buffoon. So if I seem a little harsh to some of these critics sometimes, it's because they're ignoring the obvious things, in my humble opinion, because they're not telling people the most basic things. All we're getting out of the experts that we're seeing on TV, the only thing we're getting out of them is wash your hands and your face. That's all we're getting. We're not getting anything about boosting your own immune system. We're not getting anything whatsoever about living a healthy lifestyle as far as taking care of yourself and eating well and eating nutritional foods. We're not getting that. All we're getting is exactly what I said. It's wash your hands, stay home, we'll send you money, wait for a vaccine. That's what people are being told. And so it really upsets me when I hear these people that are out there and they give these nice speeches in front of these TV cameras, and they just continue to talk about numbers, which is fine. I mean, that's something that has to be talked about. I understand. But they don't talk about the important things. And the important thing is to be able at this point, because there is no vaccine. And even so, when we get one, I'm very skeptical of this, because if they need to sell a vaccine, well, they don't have a marketplace for it. Well, guess what they have to do? They have to create a marketplace. Well, they're creating a marketplace right now to sell you one. And there's no guarantee that it's even going to work. And the reason I say that is because you want to compare it to the flu. The entire time that they've developed a flu vaccine from 54, 55, 56, somewhere along in there, since that time, they have not guessed the correct strain of flu virus every year. It even says on the insert, when you go to a doctor's office or a pharmacy, if you can get them to give you one, it even says in there, does not protect you against the seasonal flu. Every insert that I've ever looked at for an influenza shot says exactly the same thing. And I understand you could argue, well, that's from a liability standpoint. Okay, fine. But if it doesn't protect you from the seasonal flu, then why in the world are you taking it? Just my opinion. But in this sense, vaccine or no vaccine, it doesn't matter, because right now the most important thing is for people to be taking care of themselves, to be boosting your own immune systems. And that's not being talked about, because that's your best chance of fighting off any type of infection, whether it's bacterial or viral or whatever it might be, right? That's your best chance of fighting off an infection. And it's not even being talked about. And I think it's just, that's criminal in my opinion, but that's just my take. But we can move on. If you guys would like to say something on that, go right ahead.
Dr. Fauci has been very truthful and straightforward about what's going on. He doesn't sugarcoat it, but he doesn't make it alarmist. And he did mention on, I believe it was the CDC website or the NIH website, there are general guidelines about, you know, what foods to avoid, what foods to eat, stay hydrated, ibuprofen for fever, things like that. Avoid over-the-counter cold medications if you have COVID, because they don't do any good. So the knowledge is out there, but I think it's not part of the mainstream news cycle where they're getting it out there. If you happen to catch the right news conference, oh, I didn't know this guy just told me, let me check it out. So I think that's part of the problem, is there is information out there, but it's not made widely known.
Do you want to cover the thing in New York? Like I said, I don't know if it's a hit piece. I don't know if it's truthful or not, but again, sensational. We'll talk about New York for a second, because right now it's the epicenter and I think it's important, but they're throwing up sensational numbers. They're saying, you know, 98 people died in 7 hours. City's death toll is 914. And Mayor de Blasio warns people will be fined up to $500 if they don't stay home. Yeah, I don't want to, you know, scare people here or anything, but I mean, maybe that's what this article was designed to do. I don't know, right? I'm just looking at it from the average person's standpoint. And it says here that, and it clearly shows medical staff loading pallets of bodies into trucks, semi-tractor trailers that have been parked at hospitals in Brooklyn. And it says the epicenter of the virus in North America right now is, or excuse me, in America right now is New York City. And it says that city officials said this is the biggest deployment of makeshift morgues since the September 11th, 2001 attacks. There's also field hospitals that are being set up in Central Park, and they've got, I see some pictures and videos and stuff of where they're doing this. They're taking over luxury hotels like the Plaza and the St. Regis to set up emergency centers, quarantine centers, and things like that. And I said that the U.S. Navy hospital ship Comfort arrived in New York Harbor yesterday, and it will be bringing an additional 1,000 beds. Now, the interesting thing about that is one of the questions I watched the press conference. One of the questions that was asked to Mayor de Blasio was, this is going to supply an extra 1,000 beds. That's going to be good to help deal with normal cases. They're not going to take COVID patients, but it's going to be for taking, you know, just normal bumps and scrapes and bruises and all that stuff. That's what it's going to be for. But he was asked by one of the people there asking questions. He says, how many equivalents of that hospital ship is the city projected to need to deal with the onslaught of what we're about to see with this? And his response was, we need 40 more of these if we're going to deal with it. You can take that for what you will. I don't know how bad it's going to be in New York. I really don't have any idea. If the numbers I heard yesterday are correct, there are reports at the moment of they're looking at around between 15 and 20% already of hospital workers, you know, nurses and doctors, LPNs and whatnot, that are working in these hospitals on the front lines in the wards. And they're already, to the numbers that I said, about 15 to 20% are already infected at this particular point. So what does that mean for New York? I don't know. But they're talking about a peak in 2 weeks, but not if the health system fails. So, you know, I wish them all the best up there, and I hope that they can get a grip on it. Let's jump over to the economy. Do you guys have anything you want to say on New York before we move on?
Most places are 6-12 days behind New York. So I believe New York is the trendsetter. But then, as you were saying, California, Louisiana, Florida. I know in Rhode Island and Massachusetts, the Army Corps of Engineers is active. They are looking at potential sites to set up emergency hospitals or can be converted into hospitals. A lot of states are looking at New York and going, oh, please, 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 don't let it be as bad as some of the models show.
Let's jump over to some predictions on the employment. And right now they're saying that we had 3.3 million claims last week. We had 1.2 million claims, I believe, the week before, or up to 1 million claims the week before. And we had 3.3 last week. They were calling 2.25. I called 2.5. We both undercut it. We were both wrong. So it rocketed up to 3.3. But now this is a call out of CNBC. That's the financial network. And it says that job losses could total 47 million. 47 million, if you can imagine that. And the unemployment rate may hit 32%, right? This is an estimate. This is put out by CNBC, but this is an estimate by the Fed. And they're saying that the coronavirus economic freeze could cost 47 million jobs and send the unemployment rate soaring past 32%, according to St. Louis Fed projections. There are nearly 67 million Americans working in jobs that are high risk of layoffs, according to the analysis. St. Louis Fed President James Bullard said last week in the initial estimates, and they look grim, but the plunge should be short-lived. So what do we think about that? That's a pretty bold prediction. If you're looking at 32% unemployment rate nationally and 47 million out of work, that's depression levels by far. So, and I don't mean just mild depression. I mean Great Depression levels of unemployment. So what do you guys think about that? How do we remedy that? How do we stop that from happening?
At this point, honestly, I don't know that we do remedy it, or at least stop it. I think this is going to be, it's an inevitable outcome for quarantining so many people or requiring them to social distance. And basically, if you don't have to work or your job isn't essential, then don't go to work. You stay home. Because of that, companies are laying off because they can't afford to have employees because they have no revenue. You know, as we've talked before, most companies have a profit margin of about 5%. You can't operate, you know, if you can't operate and sell, produce or offer a product or whatever, you can't pay the bills. So you got to shut the doors. If they would have done this sooner, you know, froze things like rent, any kind of mortgages, you know, that sort of thing. If they would have done that sooner, maybe these companies wouldn't have had to shut down so quickly, or maybe, you know, so many people wouldn't have been laid off. But now that we're here, we're only going to see it a little bit. We're going to see it more. There's going to be more people laid off. It could. I think that number is accurate, and we could end up seeing a 30% unemployment. In some cases, people will, honestly, you're going to get paid more. In some cases, I believe Missouri is one of the states that will actually make more going on unemployment than your typical job. So I mean, why would you want to keep your job in this scenario when you're not even guaranteed you're going to keep your job? Why not jump on unemployment, get the extra money, you know?
Yeah, but unemployment is only going to last so long. You know, I agree with you that I'm not sure, to your point, I'm not sure that we can stop it at this point. I would like to think that we can stop it at this point, but I'm not sure that we can, because what do we do? You're absolutely right. What do we do? How do we stop it? How do we stop it from happening when you still have issues like people having to make rent payments, make mortgage payments, things like that? That should have been done initially. As soon as we decided that we were going to have to shut all non-essential businesses, everything should have been frozen at that point. All of it. Everything. GP and I were discussing this. I think you were here, or maybe it was before you got here the other day. And I can't even remember if we did it on recording. I've lost track now of all this stuff that we talk about, because it's a jumbled mess. But what we need to do, if we're going to preserve what we've got, then I think what needs to happen is along the lines of what you said, but we need to go a step further with it. I think we need to do a hard freeze of everything. And I mean everything. I'm talking all payments, all insurance, you know, everything. Anything you make a payment on has to be frozen. It has to be stopped, because there's no way for people to do anything other than, I don't want to say it, but survive, right? We just want to put people in a sense of survival mode. So they need their essential expenses like food and water, and that's it, right? That's all that matters at this point, because we don't need to go down the road of a Great Depression. Because if we go down that road, right, if we go down that road, we see these kind of numbers. If we go to 47 million unemployment, we go to a 32% unemployment rate. If we go there, then you're going to see not only that economic fallout, but, and forget the pandemic, right? Forget the virus, because have you ever seen what happens to a populace of people that is malnourished and can't afford food? Because you're going to have a dollar crisis on top of it. That's going to be the other factor to this. So you're going to have the dollar crisis. You're going to have whatever remnants we've got of, it'll be a spiraling system at that point, because you won't be able to maintain anything. But you'll have the pandemic that will not stop spreading. You'll have the economic fallout. You'll have people just fight, literally. I mean, they'll be doing like what they're doing in Venezuela, right? They're fighting to survive down there. And that's real. You know, that's the reality of the situation. So if you've got people that are starving in a society, then a virus is going to be the least of your worries. You have absolutely positively no fighting chance at that point to fight off any kind of a disease or a viral infection or even a bacterial infection at that point, because you're malnourished and your body can't fight it off. I don't think we need to go down this road. I really don't think we need to go down this road. We need to avoid it. But at the same time, as you said, how do we avoid it, right? We're in a catch-22. So, Tavish, what's your take on that?
I think it is a catch-22 because people need a job to get money to buy, and the other way around. But my question is, you talk about 47 million out of work. How many of those jobs are going to come back? Look at the mom and pop stores, the gig outfits. Can they afford to put things on hold for as long as this is going to go on and then have employment for their people to come back to? That's my question. How many people are going to be able to ride this out and still have a job at the end of it?
Yeah, so, and you're right. But that's why I say we need to freeze everything. If we're going to save it, right, if we're going to preserve it, then we have to have a hard freeze across the board. As in, people can't lose their storefronts. That would play along with it. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, exactly. The landlord's not getting rent. The business isn't making any money. You get all these bills. I mean, we're already seeing empty storefronts because some of the smaller stores just, they had to let people go. They couldn't afford to stay open. They're not essential or whatever. So it's one of those things where, like I said, like you were saying about the snowball effect. Once it starts spinning out, it's going to be really tough to get it back under control. So like you were saying, we got to hit this in the butt.
Okay. All right. Let's get to some more interesting stuff. All right.
I have a question for when we do come back online. Let's say we got the pandemic under control. Everything's starting to kick off again. We're starting up. Even if the mom and pop shop was able to sustain their business and didn't go under, how are we going to ensure that that's going to remain? Because if, for example, we do have a 30% unemployment rate, how are we going to get money in the economy going? You get what I'm saying? Like, if I've spent most of my money, all of my earnings, or all the little, you know, infusions of cash that the government's doing, if I've spent that all on just surviving, I don't have anything left to go out and buy something to keep the economy rolling. So what are we going to do? Even when everything's back up and running,
how are we going to keep that cash flow going when so many people are out of work?
Flush the system with cash. That's the only thing you can do. And I don't mean sending money to the big boxes. I don't mean Walmart and Target and Amazon. That's not what I'm talking about. We need to flush mom and pop with cash, those businesses. Because if we're just flushing cash anyway, we might as well just do it, right? I mean, I'm not talking about giving it to the tops of these corporations because, look, those people got money in savings and liquidity and they can deal with it, okay? They can sell off assets. Mom and pop can't do it. So if we're going to do this, then I guess we can kind of bridge that gap and then we can pick it up later down the road, right?
I mean,
I'm just thinking options. So. Here. Yeah, I'm just talking options here. Because if you infuse the cash, right, even if it's in a business loan, if it's in a loan of some kind, if you infuse the cash into the small mom and pop business, they can recoup those losses down the road and pay it back. If you don't put a timeline on it, if you don't put a tag on it, then if there's no end date on that note, then they can pick up that tab later down the line when they're in the black. And then they can start to repay it then, right? Kind of like you can make it a long-term promissory note if that's how you want to do it. I'm just throwing ideas out here. I don't know. But that would be a way to at least stave it off, right?
I think so. I mean
yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Bruce.
No, that's all I had. I was agreeing. I honestly don't know what to do to try to.
I don't either. But we're trying. But you're absolutely right. And you're right to ask it because we're trying to preserve a way of life here. That's what we're trying to do. Because if not, we know where the other road goes, right? We know where that road goes. We don't want to go down there, right? We're talking 100 million dead in 100 years. We don't want to go down that road. I don't want people to go down that road because if history's taught us anything as a human species, okay? If it's taught us anything, common sense tells you, I don't care, forget politics. Common sense tells you that collectivization does not work. It doesn't work. It ends the same every time. So we cannot go down that road. We have to do whatever we have to do to stop that from happening. We can't go down that road. I don't care about all the pie in the sky promises and the, you know, everything's free and it's going to be some utopia. You know, go read history and then come back and talk to me about free and utopia. So, okay, let's jump over to this. I thought this was just funny. Everybody's savior now is Governor Cuomo of New York, which, by the way, on a side note, Chris Cuomo, the CNN anchor, the brother of this guy, the little brother of this guy, he has been diagnosed with coronavirus. And you know what? I wouldn't wish this on anybody. Honestly, and I really don't care for that guy. I don't care for his reporting or anything like that, but he's entitled to his opinion and I respect him for that. So I do wish him a recovery, a full healthy recovery. So best of luck to him. He's quarantining himself in his basement, by the way, to try and deal with it. So, but anyway, his bigger brother, what's his name? Governor Cuomo of New York. Andrew Cuomo from New York. He is now being called President Cuomo. Right. He's up there giving all these big speeches to the National Guard. We played it here the other day about how everybody's all in unity and solidarity and, you know, everybody's looking for a leader. What would you guys think about the Dems switching him on the ticket for Biden at the convention that no one's going to be at this year? How do you guys think that would play to the Democrat voter, considering he's got an attitude that really no one outside of New York even understands? Like, he's not going to connect with somebody with that attitude he's got. He's not going to connect with somebody in middle America. He will connect with voters of New York and people up in New England, probably. But he's not going to gain very much support with that kind of an attitude and his mantra in, say, the Midwest. So what do you guys think about possibly the Dems switching him on the ticket? I don't think it'll work. But if they can tout it well enough, then maybe they can pull it off. What do you guys think?
This is the first I've been hearing of that. And honestly, I agree with you, Johnny. He's not going to play well outside of his set base, so to speak, the Northeast, New York, maybe Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland. But for the Midwest or some of that down south, I just don't see the appeal to the voter. I'm not saying that Biden has any more appeal, but I just think in terms of the apples and oranges, I just don't see Cuomo going that far if they did decide to swap him for Biden.
I mean, at least from the perspective of he seems a little bit more coherent and there than Biden does. And that's not a dig at Biden. I legit feel sorry for him and embarrassed for him because this is like, he's an elder. I would prefer we respect him. And I don't want him to be in the public eye as he's having these gaffes and whatnot that appear to be either from, you know, health reasons or age or whatever, what have you. But he does at least seem a little bit more coherent, possibly able to run a country. So, I mean, they at least have that going for him. And honestly, if they were to replace people, Democrats that typically vote Democrat, would, I think, have a sigh of relief voting for Cuomo over Biden just on that premise, not necessarily on anything else.
So you kind of subscribe to the Brett Favre theory. If you're going to step out, stay out. Look at Brett Favre. Came, retired, came back. Retired, came back to the Jets of all teams. Oh, my word. You know, world-class quarterback, Hall of Fame. He ends up with the Jets and looks like a fool. So I understand what you're saying about Biden.
I don't want to see him having these kind of things in public, you know, these kind of gaffes or shortcomings in public. Like, this is a, I don't know, I have a respect for when you get elders to that age. I feel for them when they're going through this, these kind of issues, especially in the public eye. I don't want him to be remembered like this, you know, in the end. I don't, and mind you, I don't like the guy. I don't like his policies. I think he's corrupt and everything, but as a human being, I hate this for him at the same time.
So we were looking over some of the spending and stuff, and the first bill that was put forth by the House, the one that didn't pass. We were looking at some of that stuff. We quoted some of the excerpts on here, and we were looking in some interesting things. And the reason I bring this up is because we were talking about a possible switch there, and I think that this can kind of play a bigger role here. I'm talking about the pandemic. It can play a bigger role here in the upcoming election. We've got an election coming up this year. So what are they going to do? How are they going to use this pandemic to capitalize on the election and try and get Trump out of there? How are they going to do that? Well, we were seeing all of this voting related stuff in this coronavirus bill that the Congress was trying to pass, and we couldn't figure out why. Well, it dawned on me today as to why. It's possible. Now, this is just my take, right? It's possible that they could do this, and I could see it because it's like well, I said it to you earlier, Bruce. It's like watching a badly scripted movie, how predictable these people are. So what are they trying to do, right? I think they're going to use this pandemic to force the hand of voting and early voting at that, because there were a lot of provisions in that bill about early voting. And there were also provisions for same-day registration. And there were also provisions for, it was auditing, security auditing, right, Bruce? That's what it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, and we boiled that down to the fact, the way that it was worded, we brought it down to the fact, you know, what they were actually saying with it. And it was, well, we can't audit these votes any longer. We can't do that. Well, if they have a mail-in ballot, right, if you have everybody across the country mailing in their ballots, well, that's easy enough to stuff, isn't it? That's easy enough to have a couple of tractor trailers show up with ballots full of everybody that voted 100% D. They voted along party lines, right? That's an easy way to do it. So what are they going to do? This year, they're talking about already, they're just floating a little idea here and there, just off to the side, not in any major publications or anything. But what are they saying? Well, how are we going to vote this year if we have a coronavirus pandemic? How are we going to do that? How are we going to vote in primaries? We can't have the primaries, so what are we going to do? Well, we're going to have mail-in ballots. Everybody can vote by mail. Well, if you have all these provisions that were in the bill that we looked at just the other day, or if you pass them one at a time, a little bit at a time, then they can have most of those regulations and those rules in place by the time the election rolls around. So you can have early voting. You can have no voting audits. You can have same-day registration. And then all of a sudden we have mail-in ballots because nobody can go because there's a pandemic going on. We can't be around each other. So polling stations are closed. Everyone's going to have to mail in their ballot. Okay. So that's an easy way. I'm just saying, right? This is an easy way for them to steal an election because, look, we all know, as you just said about Biden, right? Look, the guy just doesn't have it, right? He's not all there, you know, upstairs, if you will. Honestly, I agree with you. I don't like his policies. I don't really like the guy, I mean, at all, because forget his politics, but just the dealings that he was involved with overseas that we know about. That's another problem in and of itself. But I don't like the guy. I don't like his policies. And I don't think he has a snowball's chance when it comes to winning the election this year. But if you have all these other factors in place that I just previously mentioned, well, then there's a pretty good chance that they could put somebody in there like that, couldn't they? That's just my take. That's just my call on it. Anyone else is welcome to their own opinion on it. But I'm just trying to connect the dots here as I see them coming to me. And it seems to me like if we have a postponed election, or if we have a system where they say, well, we can have some polling stations open, but we can't have all the polling stations open. And these states will be excluded because they have the worst outbreaks or whatever. And we have to have mail-in ballots from these states. And then all of a sudden, you know, we've got, like you said, Bruce, we've got, you know, here's 518 wheelers full of, 700,000 ballots that we just happened to find. We're going to have to count those. Oh, wait, no, we can't count those. No. See, we have this regulation right here that was just passed that says we can't audit due to security reasons. So we just have to accept them for what they are. No, that's not democracy. That's not democracy. So we can't do that. Well, it's OK. Is that really, do we want to, I can't call it a democracy because that's not what it is it? But voting is a form of democracy, right?
I mean, believe
we're,
so.
We're a republic, but yeah.
Democratic we're a republic, yeah. So, but yeah. We're not a democracy. But voting is a democratic form of voicing your opinion. So yeah, okay, fine. I don't know. But that's just what I see on it. I see the way that they're trending with it. And it's quite shocking to sit here and read it. Not really. Maybe I shouldn't say that. It's not really shocking. It's I guess it's predictable is the way that I would put it, because I would expect nothing less out of a bunch of people that can't win an election. If you can't win an election, then this is something that you would have to do. And this is precisely the steps that they're taking. What do you guys think? Should we postpone the election? Should we do the mail-in ballots after everything I just mentioned? Should we do that? Should we give it a try?
Well, it's interesting you mention about that, because we've already seen states that have postponed their primaries and moved them back to June, July, whatever. So in a way, we're creating a new Super Tuesday, so to speak, where all of a sudden these later states now have more power because it went so long. Now, whether Sanders stays in or not, I do not know. In fact, is he still in? Does anyone know?
Last I heard, he was. Yes, he's still. Last time he was asked about whether he was going to back out, he said, I'm dealing with a pandemic here.
Okay, so it could be a brokered convention. But again, later voting, maybe it can sway Sanders' way. Maybe it goes Biden way. Who knows? But I do agree with your basic premise, Johnny, that there needs to be stricter controls on this. Just for the transparency, even the whiff of something irregular, you're going to have people up in arms.
Honestly, I'm concerned that what their motives for wanting these changes are, it very much looks like what Johnny was saying could be possible. At the same time, if this pandemic does continue on long enough to where, you know, we do need to question whether we go to the ballot box and whatnot in person, there is a valid point on, well, if we're quarantining, you know, we do need another method of voting. But I think there would be some ways we could ensure the security of those kind of votes. But because they're wanting to loosen the restrictions and whatnot, it just, yeah, it doesn't look good. It definitely does not look good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Speaking of not looking good, let's jump down to D.C. The D.C. mayor threatens to throw people in jail for 90 days and fine people up to $5,000 if they leave their homes. Yes, you heard me right. You heard Bruce talk about waking up having a horrible nightmare yesterday. Well, this would be it, right? You come out of your house, you could be thrown in jail for up to 3 months. The threat of jail is alarming residents and civil libertarians. The mayor, Muriel Bowser, is threatening residents of Washington, D.C. with 90 days in jail and $5,000 fine if they leave their homes during the coronavirus outbreak. Our message remains the same. Stay home. Bowser, a Democrat, said in a statement on Monday, the stay-at-home order has some exceptions for grocery shopping and work deemed essential. Outdoor recreation such as running is allowed, but cannot involve people outside of a household. The order is similar to the orders that are dictated in the state of Maryland and also in the state of Virginia, but shocked residents of Washington, D.C., where there's just 401 of the nation's 160,000 confirmed cases. This is I'm going to read a quote here by Mercedes Schlapp, which is Trump's former White House Director of Strategic Communications. She said, this is insane. When we saw this order, we thought, you want to send them where? People being arrested for that causes all sorts of problems that are antithetical to the goals of lessening the virus. So what do we do? What do we do? It says here the ACLU is involved in this. I mean, look, we know we have to social distance. We know we have to social separate. We know that things are going to have to be closed in order to ensure this. We understand. We know the economy is going to take a hit. We know, and more importantly, we know the dollar is going to take a hit. Any investor is going to tell you that. The dollar is going to take a hit on this, a serious hit, especially the way that we're printing money. We're throwing money up in the air and we're throwing it down a black hole, right? The dollar is going to take a hit without a doubt. Mom and pop are going to take a hit because mom and pop are being ignored. And more than that, I'll do you one better. This bailout, this $2 trillion up to us, now it's what they're talking up to $6 trillion in expenditures, whatever, right? Do you know who's not included in any of that bailout money that I might point out that we haven't even touched on yet that nobody seems to be pointing out? Truckers. Truckers are not included. Trucking companies are not included in any of that, any of those bailouts. And I think that's shameful. Those people need to be given priority because they are critical to the survival of the supply chain in the United States and total chaos breaking out. So somebody's got to do something in order to address that on the Hill other than just be a bunch of bumbling buffoons. But okay, back to DC. What do we do with this? Do we comply with this? Does this need to happen? I mean, people aren't getting it in mass, right? Now, GP said, look, we're on week four. Wait till week 14. Watch what happens then. You know, maybe people will start taking it seriously at week 14. They're not taking it seriously now. So do we continue on? Do we let people just ignore it? Because the people I talk to, they say in their neighborhoods, people are taking it like a vacation. They're treating it like it's a vacation. They're coming home. They're going, working around their house or doing whatever, which is fine. But they're going out shopping. They're going out to get ice cream. They're going to the park with the kids. We can't be doing this. So how do we address this problem? Okay, constitutionally, we know that this is not right, right? We understand that. But as you said, Bruce, before, in the matters of public health, they're going to sidestep it and go around it and whatever. And it's a loser when you take it to court. And now you got the ACLU involved in this saying it's a violation of civil rights. Okay, so how do we deal with it? Or do people just bite the bullet and deal with it and be responsible and say, you know what? I'm going to stay home and I'm going to cancel. Because let's just be honest here. Summer's canceled. Okay, I don't care what country you're in. Summer's canceled. People are going to have to come to grips with it and people are going to have to deal with it. I know that's a hard pill to swallow right now. Because people are still doing everything that I just mentioned that in the United States, which I think is insane. But this is not going to go away in 2 weeks. It's not going to happen. So the best way to look at this right now is summer of 2020 is not going to happen. Okay, so you better make your plans to the contrary right now on what you're going to do. So how do we deal with this DC situation? Do people follow this? Do you see a pushback on this from the populace there? How do they look at this?
This was just in the news. A pastor of a megachurch. I want to say Florida, but don't quote me on it. I'm not sure where, but he was arrested because he refused to enforce the social distancing guidelines, and he was packing them into his church by the dozens, literally standing shoulder to shoulder, singing hymns or whatnot. And I understand religion as a very important place, but look at the Catholic Church. No more going to mass in churches. It's all done online or TV. So I do think in cases like that, I think it's quite justified arresting the pastor because he's putting people's lives at risk. In terms of John and JQ Citizen, if they're trying to observe the social distancing, again, I can't stress this enough because I see it at work. People think, oh, okay. And they just wander around in groups or whatever, or they walk up to people and it's like, whoa, keep your distance, please. So I think if people start bearing down, paying attention, hopefully, as they say, it will mitigate the extent of this virus. But if people don't, when they talk about a peak, that's when it's really going to hit home for people, when the bodies start dropping by the dozens or the hundreds.
Okay, so part of my issue with some of these laws and whatnot, again, do we believe in the Constitution or do we not? Is the Constitution something that we want to abide by here in the United States or not? Because this is where we're tested, is in these situations. If we're willing to violate the Constitution in these extreme circumstances, why are we abiding by it then? I mean, why do we have it? Like if, for example, the religious gathering, yeah, it's not wise. It's not, that's definitely not wise. But my argument is where's the line? Like I've said earlier, it's very possible for just the flu, you know? I mean, currently as it stands, more people have died from the flu this year alone than have died from the coronavirus. And Why do we not do the same scenarios, social distancing, that sort of thing, just because of the flu? It would be very easy for the government to extend this, these kind of restrictions and whatnot, just because, well, it's unsafe. We could easily, you know, spread viruses and diseases and whatnot so easily. So we have to violate constitutional rights and whatnot just to protect the health of the community or the populace. So I'm really concerned with where are we drawing the line? And on top of that, we're not even sure that social distancing is going to work. This virus may end up being with us for the rest of human existence, or at least until we develop the technology to eradicate viruses, globally. We're not even sure this is going to really curb it in the long run. So I don't know. I'm not saying stop doing the social distancing. I'm still advocating that. I'm just man, having the government come in and say, hey, you're going to jail if you don't do this, or you're going to be fined for not doing this.
While releasing prisoners, by the way.
While releasing prisoners, yeah, that have been convicted or are, you know, awaiting trial, which are technically innocent, but until they're proven guilty. But again, come on, this is, it just stinks. It smells bad. It tastes bad. This is bad. And I'm really concerned that this is going to be a new trend, or this is going to,
I'm telling you, we come out of this. There's something wrong here.
It definitely tastes that way right now, and it smells bad. And do we retain our civil rights and whatnot coming out of this, or is this going to be a new trend? Is our society going to change because of this?
Mm-hmm. We ran a little over today, but I think we had a really good conversation. Is there anything else that either one of you would like to touch on before we call it quits here?
If I may, just two things. First thing, as far as the Constitution, I believe it comes down to, do you believe it is set in stone, or do you look the other way, that it's a living, breathing document that the framers intentionally left a little vague because they could not know everything? How would the founders of the Constitution deal with a pandemic? Didn't even know what a pandemic was. So I think that is part of it, is the Constitution set in stone and there's no different way of looking at it? Is it open to interpretation, whether it's the courts or whatever? And also, people, remember, stay away from each other. Be safe. Wash your hands. Stock up on the food. Don't go crazy. Deliveries are coming in every day to every supermarket. There will be National Guardsmen at the entryways for the first of the month. So everybody who gets their benefits, don't all run down there at once. They're going to enforce strict occupancy limits. X amount of people are allowed in the store at any one time. Employees will not count because they have to stock the shelves or whatnot. But customers, there's going to be a little wait. So just stay calm and remember what everyone else is going through, the same thing.
As well put, sir.
That's all I got.
I didn't know about the National Guard, though. That's news to me. I'm assuming they're going to start doing that in up around your neck of the woods, yeah?
As of tomorrow morning, there will be National Guard troops at the entryway to help control the crowd and enforce occupancy. One entryway has been shut down entirely. You can get out in an emergency, but you can't come in, so there's only one access point where they can count the number of people going in and count the number of people going out, so they can maintain a steady flow without overloading the store.
Okay. All right. See, there you go, Bruce. Yeah. Mr. Government's bad. Now you got an armed guard standing at the door of a supermarket to go in and get a loaf of bread. How does that make you feel? The silence says it all.
It smells bad. Yeah.
Okay. It's been a fascinating conversation, gentlemen. I appreciate taking the time. Tavish, thanks for stopping in. Even though I just talked to you about, I don't know, 5 minutes before all this and said, hey, we're getting ready to record. We have that habit, but I didn't think you were off today. I thought, I know you work a lot. I thought, for whatever reason, I thought tomorrow was your normal day off. I didn't think today was. So
no, I did work today. I literally had just gotten home and popped online. Oh, hey, how you doing?
Yeah, okay.
Here we are now. Right.
Well, no, it's good to get you in here and get your take on things, because I know you're real busy. It's nice to have you on when you're available. So
my pleasure, gentlemen.
As always, thank you to all the listeners for taking the time to sit down and listen to us today. Please, if you like what you're hearing, follow, like, subscribe, all those things that you do as a listener. We really do appreciate it. Please tell people about us. And any feedback that you all have as a listener, doesn't matter if it's good or if it's bad or if it's critical of what we do, or if you have any suggestions, show tips, those types of things, things you want us to look into, please do drop us a line at your convenience, if you so choose, at tips@dynamicindependence.com. Thank you guys for your time today, and Bruce, I will see you tomorrow.